south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, you know, I get emails about all kinds of things, and some stuff you might think is trivial, but it's really not. Not when you're a dyed-in-the-wool expat. And believe it or not, there are a lot of people listening to this show who are dyed-in-the-wool coffee lovers. They've heard me talking about having lived in the coffee fields for years and years myself and being absolutely surrounded by little coffee plantations, mom-and-pop growers of the highest quality beans. Some of them selling their total crop, or almost their total crop, to expensive boutique coffee outlets in Europe and Asia. And that's the very same stuff you can buy and I buy when I take a walk into one of these plantations and buy a couple of pounds for $5 a piece. I know this sounds weird, but they sell the same stuff in places like Japan and Germany for up to $50 a cup, not a pound a cup. And I'm getting it for $4 or $5 a pound. In fact, I'd say within 10 miles of the place I've been living in Guatemala, quite close to the Salvador border, there are probably 100 different small coffee producers, some of them only having a couple acres and only producing a few hundred pounds of coffee a year. Yeah, I said a couple of hundred pounds, really. And since technology, modern technology anyway, hasn't come to the coffee picking business yet, you can see a couple times a year little guys with hats and sacks out in the field hand picking every coffee bean. That's how you do it. Oh, and by the way, that's when the rivers in coffee growing regions get really foul. Because after they pick the beans, they have to skin them, you know, to get down to the hard center of the bean. So what do you do with the rest of it, the so-called fruit? You've probably seen a coffee fruit in pictures anyway. It's red, little ball looks like a cherry, and the bean, of course, is in the center. But the fruit that surrounds the bean and the red outer surface have to be discarded or reused. Sometimes they'll use it as fertilizer. But you know, it's really good for you. In fact, the coffee grower nearby me, he says, if you eat the red part, the fruit, the cherry, they call it, it'll not only give you a buzz, it'll make you poop. And you know, the picker's hands are always kind of red and stained, and ladies will tell you, after they pick the coffee, they have the softest, nicest hands for the next couple of weeks. Oddly enough, in some little boutique shops actually make a kind of a jelly out of it for sale, not to the locals because it's super expensive, but to the tourists. I've tried it. It's pretty acidic. It's, you know, one of those souvenirs you buy and you put on your shelf and you never eat. If you travel a lot soon enough, you build up a big collection of oddball jars of regional foods that look nice on the shelf, but that's about it. You never crack them open. By the way, how's your collection of inedible edibles coming? Anyway, when harvest season comes, that's when the rivers get really foul. I mean, they're pretty much polluted anyway, but they actually turn gray because somehow, during the coffee processing phase, when they remove the red skin and the liquidy fruit part, a lot of that ends up as runoff in the local rivers. Problem is, and the coffee pickers will tell you this, for every 6 bags of coffee fruit, they get about 1 bag of the final product, the coffee bean. And that's not good for man, beast, fish, or crawdad. Way too acidic. And how do I know all this? Because I've got a river running through the homestead, and I know. When those guys are messing around with the coffee harvest, not only because I see them out with their hats and big white sacks picking the beans, but always a week or so later, the river turns nasty gray. Oh, and by the way, picking coffee beans is tough, hard work, but there's a family affair happening. Usually the young kids will be out there, mom will be cooking, dogs and driveway chickens running around. Everybody pitches in. There's lots of smiles and laughter going around too. Who says you can't have a crap job and still have fun? So anyway, one of my own personal vices is coffee. And vice number 2, once in a while I'll have a nice Cuban, Dominican, or Honduran cigar. Not on a regular basis, though. Maybe one every month or two. Which is why, by the way, at least one night during every one of my expat insider seminars, I'd invite everyone down to my favorite cigar bar. Some of the ladies often tag along, too, and even indulge. Where, of course, the Cuban cigars are plentiful and legal. Isn't it funny? Real Cuban cigars called Havanos or Puros can be purchased at any halfway decent cigar shop all throughout Latin America for about a third of the price you can buy them up in the States, where they're illegal, yet still obtainable and passed around in boardrooms as gifts. Who'd have thought that would be one of the best gifts you could ever give a U.S. businessman? Yep, an illegal box of real Cuban cigars is always in demand. In fact, I've had many friends up in Chicago say, "Johnny, can you get me a box or two?" Because they know that's one way to sweeten the odds when you're going to close a business deal. However, I'm sure if they weren't illegal up in the States, they wouldn't have half the cachet. As for me, guilty as charged, I've shipped a few boxes clandestinely back to the States, and one to a friend of mine who was head of advertising at, get this, Jockey Menswear. I know, some of you are saying, smoking, that's a terrible, disgusting habit. Hey, but I'm not talking about you necessarily smoking them yourself. I mean, look, imagine how delighted your Grandpa Petey or Uncle Harry would be if they received just one real Cuban cigar in one of those fancy tubes with a bow on it for Christmas. Hey, they might never smoke it, but just to have it sitting out in the office, kind of on display, to some people, it would mean a lot. It's a guy thing, you know, like having a cowboy hat mounted on the wall that you never wear, an autographed football on your shelf that you never throw, or a picture of you with the international world champion Hooters baseball team in your desk drawer because your wife or girlfriend won't let you put it on display. That's a girl thing. So then how does one go about getting illegal Cuban cigars into the States? Well, here's how expat Eddie does it. He buys a nice box of Cubans in any cigar shop in Latin America, along with a box of similar-looking but much cheaper Honduran or Dominican cigars. Take them all out of the box, remove the paper bands that say Cuba, save those bands, don't throw them away, put the Honduran or Dominican bands on the Cuban cigars, and presto chango, you slide right through customs in Miami, New York, or Chicago. All right, I'm not telling you to break any laws, no matter how stupid they are. All I'm doing is informing you how a lot of astute gringos get their Cubans back to the States. And last I checked, you're allowed to bring 100 cigars in total back to the States without paying customs or import duties. But no Cuban cigars or Habanos allowed. Oh, and about buying things at duty-free shops and airports. What a joke. I mean, look, as soon as you get into any airport, a cup of coffee is no longer a buck and a half, it's $5. A small bottle of water is not 75 cents, it's $3. Everything, I mean everything, triples or quadruples at the airport. So what makes you think you're not going to get screwed at a duty-free shop? If you've noticed, duty-free shops don't spare the cost. They're all glitzy and high-end with nothing but classy, expensive displays and lighting. How do you think they pay for all that? Besides, some of the highest rents for kiosks and commercial spaces in any big city are, guess where? Along pedestrian walkways in airports. So bottom line, skip the duty-free. Oh, besides that, most travelers don't even realize you're allowed to bring a certain amount of booze and cigars and other stuff duty-free automatically. Just have a look at the customs form you have to fill out before you leave the airport. If you notice, it'll say something like, of course, depending on the country, you're allowed 1 or 2 quarts of liquor and $200 in merchandise or jewelry, whatever. Well, that doesn't mean you can't buy and bring through as much as you want. It's just that after $200, they start nailing you with aduana and customs fees. But you knew that already, right? Wait a minute. We were discussing coffee, weren't we? And one of my vices is good coffee. I mean, look, when you're surrounded by coffee and you smell it in the air practically every day, if you don't become an aficionado of the stuff, man, it's like living across the street from Disneyland and never going on the rides, or having the Alps in your backyard and never going skiing. People that know me well know that I have a really nice Italian espresso machine. Not one of those cheap and crappy Black & Decker Oyster or Hamilton Beach jobs. It's a real restaurant-type espresso machine. And I've got a nice, expensive Italian coffee bean grinder, too. If coffee is your thing or one of your things, you might as well go all out, right? In fact, I'd like to give a big shout-out to Melanie, one of my early Expat Insider Seminar attendees, who said to me, "Johnny, is there anything I could bring down for you? I'm coming from the States." Well, man, she didn't know what she was getting into. Those were the days, of course, around 6 or 7 years ago now, before Amazon had it together to ship things to Latin America, and the drop shipping companies just didn't exist or were so prohibitively expensive it wasn't worth it to send anything down. Anyway, seems like most everyone who comes down to my Expat Insider seminars will say, Johnny, can I bring anything down for you? I really do appreciate the gesture, but it's just not necessary to do that anymore. When, believe it or not, you could order things directly from Amazon, get them in a week, two at the most, and pay only an extra $3 to $8 a pound to get it to you in practically any Latin country you're living in. And if you're shipping big, heavy, bulky stuff, it's somewhere around $13 a cubic foot. So as far as the shipping thing, we've got that figured out. Anyway, for a guy like me who's into coffee, in fact, so into coffee, when I look out my window, I can see the little coffee trees, bushes, or shrubs, whatever you want to call them, staring at me, kind of beckoning. So I'm all set up as far as my coffee jones. I've got the best coffee in the world right outside my door, or at least a chicken bus ride away, you know. I've got a restaurant-style espresso machine and a very expensive grinder. That's why people who know me will say, Johnny, when you're traveling, don't you miss that stuff? You can't take your gear with you. They're thinking, and rightly so, on the road, you just don't know what kind of crap coffee you're going to get. In fact, at most mom-and-pop restaurants that serve breakfast, they give you instant coffee, pure veneno. It doesn't make sense. In the land of great coffee, instant, pure poison. In fact, instant coffee is a household favorite throughout Latin America. You heard me talk about that in previous shows. And it's a favorite in little mom-and-pop restaurants, too. And, you know, coffee lovers will never settle for that. And in fact, there are some medium and high-end hotels, 3 and 4 stars, that'll bring out the instant until you tell them, I don't want that crap. I want the real thing, high octane. Then the waiter will say, oh, you want cafe americano from the espresso machine? Okay. Meaning, if the coffee sucks, by all means, ask them if they've got an espresso machine. And a lot of 3 and 4 star hotels here in Latin America will provide you with a coffee maker / percolator right in your room. And I'll tell you, if your room's outfitted with one of those, you're guaranteed a terrible cup of coffee. But hey, they're there and they offer the coffee grinds and, of course, the instant coffee. And personally, I'll never settle for that because I pack with me wherever I go my own portable coffee brewing setup. So no matter where I am, my coffee's always good, sometimes great. And that's why I'm talking about this subject that could be boring to a lot of you, because I get a trickle of emails asking me about my own coffee setup all the time. Now, you longtime listeners may have heard me talk about my Bodum French press setup I carry with me. Well, that's all changed. So about 4 months ago, I upgraded my portable travel coffee kit. Man, did I upgrade. Now, every real coffee lover knows it's best to grind your beans immediately before you use them, which has always been difficult, if not impossible, if you're traveling a lot. I mean, really, you bring your beans with you and a coffee grinder and a French press. That leaves almost no extra room at all in your luggage for your shaving kit, butt plugs, and dirty undies. All right. I'm just checking to see if you're awake. You know I'd never pack dirty undies. Are you awake yet? Anyway, you do a little search on Amazon for portable coffee bean grinders and you'll be surprised. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm no fan of Jeff Bezos, nor the way Amazon has pretty much cut the throats and drained the blood out of thousands of small businesses. But hey, there are a lot of things in this world you don't like, but you use them anyway. For example, fiat money with dead presidents and genocidal dictators on them. I'm fundamentally against that stuff, but for now you have to use it, right? At least till that system crashes and burns and gold, silver, and cryptos take over. But I digress as usual. Anyway, turns out for the last 4 months or so, I've been traveling with the coffee system of my dreams. Now, you've heard me say, and you've probably heard a lot of people say, the very best coffee in the world is coming through one of those Italian espresso machines, even what they call Cafe Americano, which is a regular cup of coffee. It's made through the espresso machine. You know those machines just don't make espresso. They make lots of different kinds of designer coffees, as well as a supercharged espresso shot in a tiny demi-tasse cup. That's why when I'm out and about at any restaurant or coffee shop, I'll say, give me a cafe americano in la máquina del espresso. La máquina. In other words, I want my coffee made through the espresso machine. There's a huge difference in a cup of coffee made that way versus a cup of coffee made with one of those ubiquitous restaurant bun, B-U-N-N, coffee machines. And that goes for those Mr. Coffee-style drippers and, worse yet, percolators. By the way, I understand the late, great Joe DiMaggio made more money doing Mr. Coffee commercials than he did in his whole career in baseball. You know, he's the one who educated the whole American public to the drip style of coffee brewing. And it really was a better, more refined way of making coffee as opposed to the percolator. The thing is, before Joe DiMaggio got the U.S. housewife on board with drip coffee makers, everything was a variation on cowboy campfire coffee, if you know what I mean. You remember that scene in every John Wayne movie, you know, Walter Brennan or Gabby Hayes hands Duke a cup of coffee. It never failed. He'd make a face and say,
"You call this coffee, Pilgrim?"
and toss it into the fire. So admittedly, the drip coffee maker was a big improvement and much better than a percolator. Because, you know, the percolator is boiling away, regurgitating the coffee, and there goes all those essential oils and volatile organics that make for a good, even great, cup of coffee. At least with a drip coffee maker, there's no regurgitation or boiling, but you still had a very mediocre to bad grade of Folgers or Hill's Brother or butternut coffee. Those were the choices you had. But that was life before people caught on to the fact they could grind their own beans. And you might laugh when you hear me tell you that I grind my own beans on the road now. I know some of you are thinking Johnny's been south of the border a bit too long. He's going soft in the head. Well, not so fast. Remember I said check Amazon for portable coffee grinders? You'll see dozens of them. Even tiny electric ones that you plug in with a USB into your computer or into the cigarette lighter in your Tesla. The problem is there are so many portable grinders, you don't know which one to pick or if any of them work at all. So I did a lot of investigation, and I bought one. The one I have is one of the most magnificent yet ridiculously simple pieces of machinery I have seen in ages. It's tiny, too, much smaller than a can of shaving cream. It's got something like 30 variable blade settings for whatever kind of grind you want. Ah, but it comes with a crank, and I thought, oh no, this is no good. Who wants to get up in the morning and start cranking away? That could be real work. But it's not. It's, in fact, so easy and fast, I keep thinking, man, I wish I had this thing 20 years ago. And the way it's built, it's surely going to last a lifetime. All right, here's the name of the thing, and I don't make a cent off this. A 1Z grinder, that's number one, with a Z in the word grinder. Made, believe it or not, in South Korea. But this kind of workmanship comes at a price. It's between $75 and $100 for this little thing. But so tiny, so portable, so self-contained, not to mention indestructible. And looking at it, it's a piece of art. Doesn't produce any kind of mess at all. Oh, by the way, the thing comes in two sizes. Get the big one. It's not big. It's just got a little bigger reservoir for the grind. Now remember, this little grinder is good for one cup of regular coffee. If you want two cups, you gotta fill it up again and start cranking. Oh, and I've ditched the Bodum brand name for French press. Though I still use the French press method because, you know, it's the second best way to make coffee behind having your own espresso machine. Hey, nothing wrong with second best. You know, some 20 years ago when I first started traveling with my one cup Bodum French press coffee maker, the only thing available was a glass one. And man, I'd have to pack that thing so carefully and I broke it at least twice. So I was really happy to see around 10 years ago they came out with a plastic version. But then again, we all know about plastic and heating up things in plastic. And plastic's still not indestructible. Somehow, some baggage handler managed to break one of my plastic ones. How's that? Then just recently, I stumbled on a site where they sell portable French press units made completely of stainless steel. Why didn't somebody think of that before? Not only that, a few companies were making double-walled stainless steel French press units. In other words, they could keep your coffee warm for 10, 20 minutes, even a half an hour. Basically, like a mini stainless steel thermos bottle. So I picked up one of those, and it's expensive, around $50. But man, it's indestructible, and yes, it does keep the coffee warm for a long, long, long time. The one I had is made by a company called Freiling, F-R-I-E-L-I-N-G. Talk about superior quality. I think it's made in Austria. Again, very portable, only makes one cup at a time, but not cheap. So that's my setup, and I don't make a cent off of telling you about this stuff. And really, the only reason I've been babbling on about this at all is because I do get a fairly steady trickle of emails from people who want to know how to consistently get a very good cup of coffee on the road. Oh, and I also get a nice trickle of emails from people asking me about how I purify water on the road, too. So if you want to know how I purify my water at home and on the road, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll give you my setup. Because, you know, I don't drink anyone else's bottled water unless I absolutely have to. I always prefer to make my own. Again, I don't make a cent off it, but I'm glad to tell you about it because I know if you go to Amazon or search anywhere on the internet, you're going to find hundreds of different kind of water purification systems. It's confusing. Simply too many options. By the way, you might be thinking, who is this guy to give advice on this kind of stuff? Well, I'd say I'm slightly more qualified than your average Montezuma's Revenge plagued backpacker. Not to blow my horn too much, but remember, in a past life, I was a real engineer, double major, electrical and biomedical engineering, which I think makes me slightly more qualified than your average podcasting blowhard doofus. Or maybe not. So anyway, as far as traveling and purifying my own water, man, I've had that down for a long time. And now, finally, I've got the portable coffee-making process down, too. Oh, and did I mention my setup's virtually indestructible? Though, I do worry a bit. Not that it'll get crushed or damaged by some careless airport baggage slug, but that it'll get stolen by some airport luggage slug with a half a brain enough to realize it's got some real value. On the other hand, I'm thinking maybe there's nothing to worry about, since it's kind of strange and esoteric stuff. Put yourself in their shoes. There are a lot easier pickings out there. Like, for example, every time some wealthy, clueless lady traveler checks her Gucci luggage through. For sure, those airport luggage slugs can spot the real thing. If anyone knows the real McCoy from the Chinese clone junk, they certainly do. Wait a minute. Take that back. I understand Gucci's making their stuff in China now, too. What a shame. You know, when that real designer label luggage comes flying down that conveyor, don't think those baggage handlers aren't thinking evil thoughts. Hey, if I had a criminal mind, that's who I'd be homing in on. By the way, it's homing in, as in home, not honing in. Or as expat Eddie would say, his white trash buddies back in his trailer court days were homies, not honies. You know, I saw a hidden camera special on that very subject. Baggage handlers stealing stuff at the Miami airport. By the way, have you ever had any of your luggage stolen or anything stolen out of your luggage? I have. Never lost a piece of luggage, but I've had individual things stolen from pieces of luggage. Of course, I haven't had that happen to me for a long, long time because I use a particular preventative measure. Now, you know, when you go into any airport, well, maybe not up in the States, but here in Latin America, as soon as you walk through the doors with your luggage, there's a guy or a girl ready to wave you over to have your luggage encased in some kind of plastic wrap. Have you seen that? It's an optional thing, of course. And down here in Latin America, it's something like $5 to $10 for each piece of luggage. So is that a good idea? Yeah, it's a great idea, except to me, it's a little expensive. And sometimes, more often than not, I find I have to go back into my luggage to get something out of there. And after it's completely shrink-wrapped, what are you going to do? Got to cut through it. And that defeats the whole purpose of the thing. So my solution, and I've been doing this for years now, is I take a roll of packing tape with me to the airport. Then, right before I walk up to the airline counter to get my boarding pass and check in whatever luggage I'm going to give them, I'll take out my tape and wrap it myself. So, unless it's a very short trip, most of the time I'll check in one piece of stowed luggage. And I'll always have a piece of luggage as a carry-on, but I won't wrap that one, of course. And I'll have one of those small 10.5 or 11-inch screen computers with me in a tiny computer bag. For me, those small ones are perfectly fine. They do everything a big laptop will do. And you know, just recently, those solid-state memory mini SD cards have gotten really cheap. They allow you to easily pack in 500 gigs of storage in a tiny little computer that's just a little bit bigger than an iPad. That solved a big problem for me. I used to have to haul around a full-size laptop with a spinning hard drive. None of that anymore. In fact, I'm doing this show right now on the road with a very tiny 10.5-inch screen computer with 500 gigs of flash memory and a tiny little mini SD card. And you know, just a year or so ago, doing something like that was virtually impossible. Sure, I've got a couple of big, nice laptops back at the homestead, but I don't need them anymore. Just this tiny one. But where were we? Oh, yeah. I have this roll of packing tape. You know, that really strong, clear plastic stuff you wrap boxes with. And right before I hand over or weigh any of my checked-in luggage, if I'm checking in anything, I'll wrap it around 10 or 20 times, making sure I've covered the zippers, making them very difficult to get at. So then, what about those little luggage locks? Forget about it. That's taught in Bad Boy Luggage Handler 101. how to defeat zippers and cheap-ass locks. But, you know, if you've wrapped the tape securely over the zippers, to get inside, they'll have to rip the tape off. Too much work, man. You know those average criminals and crooks, if they meet some resistance, they move on to the next guy. Now, I'm not saying you wrap the entire piece hermetically, like you see those guys do when you pay them $5 or $10 as you walk into the airport. I'm saying you wrap it enough so that the zippers are covered and that the baggage people know it's going to be more trouble than it's worth to try to break into the thing. And you know, it's not about being a cheapskate, saving $5 or $10. It's more about the fact that sometimes, and more often than I like to admit, I have to go back into my luggage and get something or replace something or check something. And since I've got my own roll of tape, I just tape it again. However, airport and TSA rules today won't let you bring tape through, and other things, of course, in carry-on luggage, which is why when I'm done wrapping the piece that's going to get stowed, the last thing I do is open a little compartment and shove the tape in there, and that goes along for the ride in my stowed luggage, too. Oh, and by the way, if you travel a lot, you won't believe how handy it is to have a roll of that packing tape. 1,001 uses, even better than duct tape. I know it sounds like handyman blasphemy, but some things are better than duct tape. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show, and I don't want to forget to mention that my January 2019 Exped Insider Seminar will be getting underway in about a month and a half. Starts on Saturday, January 5th through Thursday, January 11th. We'll be doing both Guatemala and Salvador this time. You'll get a nice big taste of that paradise we call the Altiplano and beach life in El Salvador. And of course, 90% of the time we'll be way off the gringo tourist trail, which is just exactly what I prefer and recommend. For one thing, that's where your gringo advantage will be at its absolute maximum. And do remember to add an extra week onto your trip if you're applying for Guatemala residency, killing two birds with one stone. That'll give you time to go on that famous John Galt post-seminar trip too. By the way, if you're coming down as a single and want to hook up with a roommate, you can save a few $100 on the seminar fee. Because you see, if we can hook you up as a person sharing double occupancy, I can pass that savings directly on to you. So for all the info and sign-up details, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on the seminar link. All one word, thenewexpat.com. By the way, how's your plan B coming? Dragging along? Kind of slow? Well, you can kick it into high gear and on steroids by coming down to my Expat Insider Seminar. You might ask, is it worth it? Well, why do you think that at every one of my seminars for the past 8 years, except the very first one, of course, I have repeat offenders? Doesn't that say it all?
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.